Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Let me grab my key so I can go in my office. I was in the general office and we had some activities going on. Hey, bro.
Song worth singing.
I do too.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Welcome to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethane. And today's date is December 3rd, 2018. Yes, we have a brand new year. And for our listening audience, you know our call-in number is 646-668-2948. And the slogan for our show is, if it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. And this show is sponsored by the following sponsors: by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, which is a blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, and along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation companies. To address the high economic effects of the energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize Black-owned farmlands and historic Black HBCU campuses to develop capacity for solar installation initiatives to bring down the under and unemployment rate among our young African-American millennials attending our historically Black colleges and historically white colleges and universities around the nation. This show is also brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSL HBCU Radio Solar Talk Show Initiative, and you can get more information about our initiative by logging on to our website at www.positivechangepc.com, and you can click on our GoFundMe link and you'll find the information there on our HBCU Radio Talk Show Initiative. The show is also brought to you by Scotton Communications Network, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production, online and traditional, newspaper production, letter production, online and traditional, speech writing, book writing, editing, publishing, speaker bureau management. And that contact information is ScottonCommunicationsNetwork.com. Once again, that's ScottonCommunicationsNetwork.com. And the contact person is Dr. Women of Scotton Bethane. And yes, we have a very, very exciting show for you today. And we have on our live line Mr. Therese Collins with EchoConnect.org. And without further ado, I'm going to bring Mr. Collins on into our conversation here. Good morning, Mr. Collins.
Good morning, Mr. Bethane. How are you today?
Great. Could you speak up a little louder because I can barely hear you yet.
What about now? Is that better, Mr. Bethea?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You can hear that. Good morning to you and all of your listening audience. It's a pleasure to be able to be here, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
Well, you're more than welcome, sir, because I've had the opportunity to go to your website on Eckerd Connect Workforce Development for adults and youth programs, and your family has been in the hearts of Eckerd Connect, which was founded, I understand, in 1968 by Mr. Jack and Ruth Eckerd, a legendary power couple, often asked what motivated them to start the nonprofit in rural Florida. And they went on to indicate that it was about the kids. Today, those words still hold true, but much like other families, ours have grown nearly 5 decades later, a presence in 20 states, and the family services have expanded to include foster care, adoption, workforce development, aid for the homeless, and traditional services for troubled youth, and so on and so forth. The adult programs, ethnic workforce development programs, which I'm going to have you to share a little more information about what you're doing here in Prince George's County and the District of Columbia. Adult programs help individuals who are currently receiving government support to achieve self-sufficiency by returning to the workforce through a strong network of community services. Eligible adults are taught the skills needed to obtain jobs in today's competitive labor market. The program also focuses on leading participants to careers to provide sustainable living wages so participants can turn and provide for themselves and their families. Okay, this program was fully aligned in 2015 with the workforce development program, and you have a number of training objectives there, as well as your youth programs, which is for ages 16 to 24 for college and career programs, provide career pathways, ways for credential attainment, supportive services to young adults who may be faced with barriers for employment. Through local partnership, participant gains hands-on work experience. They also provide academic, career, and lifestyle skills that lead to long-life success. Topics include vocational skills, financial services, efficiency, and self-esteem. Well, that's quite a mouthful, Mr. Collins, so tell me what y'all really do. So, without further ado, welcome to the airways of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know that we are always looking for those type of workforce development training programs that's going to addressing the area of energy and renewable energy, specifically in this solar arena. So could you please share with our listening audience a little bit about your background, sir?
Well, my background, I've been a community advocate for probably about 30 years now in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. Serving in several capacities, working in behavior health with dealing with the opioid addictions and other social ills and systemic issues in families, Black communities, and all the families across this area, but also working in clergy alliances, community ministry of Prince George's County, feeding thousands and thousands of hungry and homeless. Working in social ills and disparities has been my background over the last 30 years. I call myself someone who is committed to build community, building coalitions that are viable but also can address the needs of populations no matter where they are, whether they're underserved or whether they're not being served, but having an impact in a positive way. I've been very much blessed to have the opportunity to work with a national company now, Eckerd, and we've been working in Prince George's County. We have an office in Hartford County, but we also have an office at the Big Chair in Washington, D.C., and also an office in the Armory, the D.C. Armory on East Capitol. We've been very fortunate as a nonprofit, but to live out what is the true vision that Mr. and Mrs. Eckerd had, that a spiritual movement occurred, and from that, offering a second chance for youth across the nation in almost 20 states now.
Well, that's very outstanding, Mr. Collins. I see that with the Job Readiness Training Program, you have a GED, high school diploma assistance, national certifications, paid workforce experience, soft skill training, transportation assistance, diversion services for families, subsidized child care referrals, domestic violence prevention services, substance and mental health treatment referrals. And, well, who qualifies for these services, Collins?
So interesting. You just list a large array of services that we offer through the Eckerd Connect nationally, but we also do foster care services and other intervention services for young people. In the Washington, D.C. area, Eckerd Paxson Connection is doing what we call Work Readiness Project. We're actually going out recruiting. We don't have referrals from a local juvenile justice or CSOS or any of those agencies. We actually have to go out and introduce ourselves to a community of 18 to 24-year-olds with a prior criminal justice record. Once they come into our program, they go to an extensive 2 to 7 week indoctrination and training and education around work readiness. But in the same time, we're also looking for gainful employment placements. So we also have a work experience program to where those individuals can work with small businesses up to 100 and 120 hours or so, get the work experience. We use that work experience and we transfer it onto the resume and look for gainful employment. So one of the things we do is we tear down the barriers, but we also advocate and we connect our participants with the employment world. I mean, that's very difficult to do because a lot of times there's a lot of barriers in that. But we've been very successful. We just had recently a lot of waxing experiences and dental offices and some other businesses, which are kind of unusual for the population in which we're working with. But what's been so valuable about it has been facilitated of working with small businesses, particularly minority businesses. It's been very, very encouraging to know that that sleeping giant of small businesses is now willing to step up and employ and offer opportunities to a lot of those participants that we're working with. It's encouraging to see that.
Well, one of the very, very concerning issues within a business, after salaries, their number one expenditure, believe it or not, is energy, and that's paying utility bills. And one of the things that we do on this show, So Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America, as we beat the drum, we try to make it plain for our listening audience. And anyone who would like to join us, you know what that call-in number is, 646-668-2948. That's 646-668-2948. And you can join us here in the studios with Mr. Collins. But Pepco, last spring, spring of 2016, they had a merger with Exxon. Now, this was approved by the D.C. Public Service Commission. They passed it, and it was a $6.8 billion merger, which made the Pepco merger in the District of Columbia one of the largest. But it also affected those ratepayers who are located in Maryland. Now, Pepco made some commitments to the customers as part of the merger, which included an immediate credit of $50 for all residential customers in Maryland, followed by a $50 credit 12 months later. They also made a $31.5 million for emergency efficiency programs, including 20% for low-income customers. In additional direct customer benefits, we have made commitments to our communities. Now, this I'm reading directly from Pepco Line News letter, which indicated that $1.2 million to Prince George's counties and $1.7 million to Montgomery County for workforce development, $14.4 million to establish a green energy fund to stimulate investments in sustainable solutions, $5 million worth of loans for development of renewable energy in Montgomery County, pilot micro projects for Montgomery and Prince George's counties, commitments to make good this effort to hire 100 and 10 union workers in Maryland in the first 2 years after the merger closes, and a guaranteed $6.5 million in contributions over 10 years to nonprofits that serve Maryland's most neediest and vulnerable residents. Now, one of the things that we do on this show, Brother Flowers, we try to make it very, very plain to our folks by trying to follow the money. I had the privilege of testifying in front of the D.C. Council back on October the 13th concerning the Solar for All program. Are you familiar with that particular program, Mr. Collins?
Familiar, Vincent, but there you kind of brought it to my awareness, but I'm not as familiar as you are. I look forward to getting more information on it.
Well, I want to share this with you because I think these are some of the initiatives and things that we should be looking at. But even before I go into that aspect, I wanted to know if you had gotten any information concerning this $1.42 million committed to Prince George's County, and has this any? Have you had an opportunity to talk to anyone about this workforce development training? Because that is what your organization does. I see that y'all are nonprofit, and I see that y'all got boots on the ground, and I see that y'all about the work of doing the work. And this is what this show is about: giving opportunities. Because one of the things that we talked about in one of our earlier telephone conversations were that y'all had a program that y'all were training young people through the online training course, which is similar to what is offered by the North American Board of Electric Practitioners, that has a 6 hour, they have it, it's an 18 hour entry level workforce development training a program that can be offered through what they call online site providers, being that someone having a certified instructor who's registered with them to oversee this online course in any computer lab that can be, this can be applicable to a high school, junior college, or a college. And I know that y'all have a program, so could you sort of share with us what you're doing in the arena? And if you were aware of these funds, I want to make you quite aware of these funds. And I understand that it went to the county exec's office, and I think you were telling me that there was a $4 million funding grant that just hit the streets in Prince George's County. So we can sort of share that information with our listening audience, because that's what we try to do. We try to bring news that our community can use to the airways of this show, Solar Now and the Future, with its economic impact on Black America. So if you could go right ahead, sir.
Well, to kind of summate what you're saying, there is a $4 million grant by the governor in the state of Maryland for companies that are actually training the workforce to work in green technology or solar panel technology or clean energy technology, which is a wonderful opportunity for businesses. But the whole foundation of how we operate and what we're looking to do, we do have the big box corporations and Pepco and all those individuals do hire a number of those disenfranchised that we train and get job ready. But the core is to have a coalition of businesses that will also offer the opportunity. And that's one of the things that has somewhat caused a great disparity in actually getting individuals placed into employment. And in Prince George's County alone, there's a lot of small businesses. So we're looking at developing partnerships with those businesses that are doing green technology that will offer internships but also work experience opportunities. And as you mentioned, the 15-hour, 18-hour course actually is a jump start. Looking from a workforce perspective, a lot of the funding is always going to be targeted through the local community colleges or the structures that are in place. We're looking to be able to jumpstart a population that often has a lot of the remedial things are not there. So we need support partners and job coaches and academic supporters to be able to work with our workforce in the remedial issues, because many can be employed without having to get a GED or high school diploma if they're given the opportunity and given the skill sets and building those skill sets to where they can be integrated into the workforce. And once they're actually put in place, they can actually get additional training and what we call trained in place. And that's a viable option. a lot of the funding that I'm aware of, you know, is out there for businesses to put in and to apply for. But what I'm finding in the industry, a lot of the small businesses are saying that they don't know about it. And if they do know about it, to actually stop and gear up in order to qualify or submit a proposal for their funding, they find it very difficult to be able to do that. So we're helping them build that capacity so that they can be successful as our partners in business. And in turn, as they grow and they build their businesses, they will also hire and place opportunities for some of our participants. That's the approach that we're using. There's a huge amount of money out there, as you know, Mr. Bethay, but the key is to be involved in the process of how that money's going to be spent. And that's one of the things we do at ECCOD is try to be at that table of reasoning, particularly for the district, because we have a 7 and 8, Ward 7 and 8, and there's an employment set aside for district residents. So if we can get individuals through an 18-hour certification program, they get a national certification in solar panel technology and installation, immediately now all of those companies doing business with the District of Columbia are going to want to hire our participants. That's what we're looking to do, to jumpstart a population that needs an opportunity to be integrated in so that they can have access to high-paying jobs with a unlimited career potential. You know, labor market standards statistics talks about a huge green opportunity in going green. But many of our participants, of course, because they are disconnected in most cases and dealing with some of the systemic issues of life, are not even aware of that. And then when they are presented with an opportunity, it's a long, drawn-out process. And we know that they've already been traumatized by past failures and experiences in their life, so they don't want to engage into that. So you have a lot of these training programs because of the duration required and the certification and the structure of education and the workforce dynamics of workforce innovation, they stay away from the programs. So you have many programs that have great opportunities but no participants in the program, and we're trying to change that paradigm by quick starting.
Well, Mr. Collins, I really, really appreciate what you're doing in the efforts in the work with this workforce development component. Now, one of the main objectives of the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative is that we advocate for the growth of African American owned solar installation companies. And recently I had a telephone conversation with Mr. Mark Davis of WDC Solar. And if you are quite aware that the fiscal 17 and 18 solar for all innovation and expansion grants were awarded in the District of Columbia. Now, we're looking at $14 million that just went out of the door of DOEE. You have the Community Empowerment Network. They received a $2 million grant. This grant will fund low-end solar co-op programs, which will bring so-called low-income residents together in a group of solar co-ops to provide more affordable purchase of solar installations. CPN will pay for the full installation of the panels on the homes for low-income residents. Low-income homeowners will receive all the associated financial benefits for the solar at no cost. Now, this particular program comes through the Solar for All program, which is a new solar energy initiative. The district goal is to reduce the energy bills at least for 100,000 low-income households by 50% by year 2032. The families who can qualify this can meet the median family income, which is called the area median income, AMI, households of 4, 75,050, households of 3, 67,050, households of 2, 60,050, and households of 1, 52,050. The specific solar power project is only open to single-family home owners and row houses and townhouses. Now, for further information, people can log on to their website at doee.dc.gov/solar. Once that web address is doee.dc.gov/solar. Now, the reason why I'm bringing up in naming these organizations. Groundswell just received a $1,261,000 grant to the installation for solar panels on six houses of worship in Wards 4, 7, and 8, which will receive will result in free 22-year community subscriptions for low-income households. Groundswell provides local employment apprenticeship opportunities. Here we go again with workforce development training. New Partners Community Solar Co-op, $2 million grant. Okay, and I'll go on and name these other entities before the show is over, but I want to get to the point where you're talking about the RPFs, which came out in DOEE, Department of Energy and Environment for the District of Columbia, last February, the RFP, rather. And I spoke with Mr. Gilbert Campbell, who is a very outstanding, dynamic young man who is one of the founders of Bold Energy, as well as Mr. Davian Strand, who has Alternative Solar Solutions. These are African Americans, and out of 9,929 African American solar installation solar companies doing business with the Collins in the U.S., we only have nine. So I understand the need to grow these businesses, and as you said, one of the strategic issues is these businesses being able to know about these grant opportunities, then having the infrastructure or staffing in a workflow to apply for these grants. Now, these organizations that have received this money, Peer Consultants received a $1,250,000 grant. These are not, none of these are African American organizations, but they're targeting the African American communities in the district to run this program through. So what our organization, the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, is reaching out to our ministers and reaching out to folks and saying to our communities, if they're going to come in with these programs, we need to have African-American-owned solar installation companies as the primary contractors on this grant for these jobs. Because none of these companies and organizations accept grid alternatives, to my knowledge. Grid Alternatives Atlantic, which is located at 1629 Benning Road Northeast, they received the first $1 million grant. It was $945,000 grant. They were responsible for training 75 DC residents to become PV installers, as well as putting PV system on 100 DC low and moderate income residents' homes in Ward 7 and 8. That goes right back to your target area, Mr. Collins. So I'm saying that Mr. Davis' organization, he was one of the primary entities that helped get this whole program started, but he didn't receive funding. And I was quite upset and shocked by the fact that his solar company, WBC Solar, did not receive one of these awards. And this is why this program exists, because we intend to beat the drum so our community can understand that organizations such as the one that you're with, who got boots on the ground, that are out there working with these businesses, that they know about these funding opportunities. But more than that, our organization, we identify with the small business development centers, such as one at UDC and Howard, to try to identify students who are working on their MBAs that can assist some of these small minority African-American firms be able to complete the application process, because you do have to have knowledge in how to apply for these grants, and more than that, it ain't what you know, it's who you know that's willing to do something for you. So that's what this show is about, connecting to all of these dots, and I want to thank you for bringing out the fact that we have minority firms out here who want to apply for this money, but they don't have the staffing or the wherewithal to apply for this funding. And this
Mr.
stuff
Tate.
Is time sensitive, and a lot of these grants, some of them require matches, which if our organizations had to match money, then they wouldn't need the grant in the first place. So it's sort of like a catch-22 with some of this stuff, but we have to be involved in the process.
Mr. Bethea, it's interesting you would say that because you have a call on the line now, Dr. A, which is in green technology, but so essential in the success of this whole rollout of this clean energy. If I would like you, if you would give out an opportunity to share, there's another component to going green and getting grants that need to be recognized, particularly the health disparity portion, because there is a health crisis that can be created by the technology itself.
Well, Mr. Collins, I just brought her into our studios. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, sir. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be able to share. This is such an informative show. I am so grateful and so thankful that Mr. Collins called me this morning. He said, wake up, whatever you're doing, you got to stop. You got to get on this show this morning because we are talking about what you do. And we are a solar company. Our name is BioSmart Solar. We're located in Prince George's County. The company is new to the community, but I am not. I'm a registered nurse. My full name is Dr. Rhoda Zion Alali, formerly a professor of nursing at Howard University. And I was named one of the most inspirational faculty at Howard. I coordinated the RN to BSN program and complex care at the National Institute of Health, the complex care clinical studies. I'm also a home care nurse in the community of D.C., and this is our concern about solar. It's because a lot of times when solar panels on the roof can increase the microsurge of radiation in coming off your electric system. In other words, I'm a new breed of nursing. I'm an environmental health physicist, and we are training nurses to be physicists now, because when you have so much electrical wiring and infrastructure and Wi-Fi and all these systems in the houses now, people are developing electromagnetic hypersensitivity. And one of the main concerns that we're having is that solar panels can increase the microsurge on the roof if they don't have adequate filtration. And I've actually been in contact with a number of families who got solar panels put on top of their house, and they developed high blood pressure and neurodegenerative diseases, so they couldn't walk. They started losing their ability to walk and actually had to have the panels taken off the house. What we're bringing to the community of Washington is two things. Number one, an alternative solar panel, a solar system that turns windows into solar devices that help with sustainability and also biosustainability, so that this problem is not occurring. And not everybody can have solar panels put on the roof. So this is a type of solar technology that can be used in every house, apartment, condo, townhouse, commercial, schools, across the spectrum of construction, and it's a double gold medal winning technology, number one. Number two, we bring a training program so that all solar companies can have resident health physicists, whether they're registered nurses or not. It just so happens that insurance companies will now pay for a registered nurse to come out and survey your house. It's called the Home Health Safety Evaluation. And a number of nurses now have this skill to be able to use these quantifying devices that were made by military nuclear engineers so that we can start monitoring how much radiation is in your electrical socket, how much radiation is coming off your flat screen TVs. Because we've known, yes, can you hear me?
Yeah. Well, it's quite interesting that you bring up this new area of concern, because I have a gentleman, Mr. Simeon Gant, who has a green technology charter school in Sacramento, California. And he, I had him on the show last April, and we were talking just about the same issue. He brought this issue up because they're training young people to be what they call energy advisors. And in being an energy advisor, they monitor the amount of radiation that is being generated by solar PV systems in one's home. So it's quite interesting that you're saying that that's something that you're doing in terms of training nurses. But they're actually already doing this in the Green Tech Charter High School in Sacramento, California, training young at-risk African-American millennials how to do exactly what you're saying. I find it very, very interesting what you're saying, and they have actual young people who are doing research projects on this type of area. And I think it's something that needs the drum needs to be beat to get the information out. I want to know, are you familiar with Dr. Gary Harris at Howard University's graduate school? He's of the School of Engineering.
Absolutely, I am. I met with him personally.
Well, I'm working with Dr. Harris on an initiative for Howard University with a project, so we can discuss that. It's a major project that we're trying to do for Howard as it relates to building a pretty large scale size solar farm, which would be located in Prince George's County. But like I said, we're still working on that initiative. But getting back to the point that you're making, I'm very, very glad to hear that you have this program. Have you been able to get the Prince George's County Public School System interested in this thing? Because this is something that seems to me that we need to be introducing to our young people on the high school level, because everybody didn't have to go to a four-year university. But I think that with this renewable energy revolution coming into play, and even more of what you're saying is that with the necessary charging infrastructure that's going to have to be put in place for the electric vehicles, that will also contribute to this radiation, because these charging stations will be wired into residential garages. So I think that this will even increase more demand for having individuals with the necessary skill sets that you're talking about to be able to monitor this radiation levels in the home, because it's clear to me, Tesla, I had the privilege of hearing the CEO of BMW, and he was on Charlie Rose's show, and he said, well, most people think Tesla is the biggest manufacturer of electric vehicles, which he has now reservations for 400,000 orders already for the RX-10 vehicle. And they just opened a brand new dealership down at 900 block of 8th Street. Now, I'm not trying to give them a commercial on here, but I'm just saying this how fast this thing will explode in this DMV market area, because a recent article appeared in the Washington Post indicating that the Department of Motor Vehicles in Washington, D.C. did not only had 600 electric vehicles registered with them, and we're expecting Tesla to roll out 1 million vehicles by the end of next year. And this will be one of the major market areas, because the DMV market area has, with the state of Maryland and the district in Virginia, has some of the most progressive renewable portfolio standards for the reduction of the carbon levels in the atmosphere. So these technologies, being that this is the nation's capital, will definitely hit here and hit hard. So I think that we need to try to get our young people up to speed as quickly as possible in what you're talking about, Doctor.
Absolutely, because Washington, D.C. has, just by virtue of the fact that we have three airports, the White House, the Pentagon, The satellite surveillance in the city, the microsurge is so high that Washington has the highest number of African-American women dying from breast cancer in wards 4 and 5. And we got a grant to actually go in and train doctors and nurses and healthcare providers in a new skill set where they can actually assess clients for hypersensitivity to and radiation absorption to breast tissue. The concern is that with all the satellite interference in the city, it is increasing the microsurge in people's homes. And then your box springs, when it was pushed to the wall in your bedroom and you're laying down, that box spring will pick up that surge. And people are actually getting a low-level tase while they're sleeping, and that's highly assaultive to breast tissue. So there's a way to assess for that. And we actually train. In this training, we give these health physicists not only skills to test the radiation surgeons in the house, we give them lessons in how to look up radiation in soil data banks on chemical conversions in the area, as well as skill sets of how to test people for energy loss in their home when they're interfacing with these wireless and electrical devices and systems. We actually teach them how to measure their bed, how to do a bed check to know if your bed is converging radiation, and we teach them how to block and mitigate the house and to use our solar technology. We've actually been in residence at Columbia University in New York for 7 years. We have 48 people on the vision team who are nuclear engineers, electrical journeymen, medical doctors, realtors, consumers, educators, because we're looking at the whole spectrum of indoors and how we can make solar better and make solar safer, because we do know that solar is necessary for us to maintain sustainability, because the grids are so overused right now and they're so overloaded that they need solar to help give some relief on these grid panels. However, our concern as healthcare providers is that with all of this rapid innovation and technology, that we do technology safe. We produce green technology. And so we're new to D.C. We were in California, and we're just opening up a location and moving part of our operation to California and now rolling it from Columbia University out. We've gone through a number of validations. And
well, you know, it's very interesting, not to cut you off there, Mr. Collins. Now,
yes, sir.
You have a workforce development training program. Mrs. Damien Straub, I just want to make this point. Mr. Damien Straub, who is the founder and managing partner of Alternative Renewable Solutions, received a grant from the Biden administration to start put up a manufacturing plant in Ward 8 to train returning citizens in manufacturing solar panels. And it's very interesting that you're talking about what you're doing, but this is why I created the show, to sort of connect these dots, because it seems to me it's imperative that the Four Walls Career and Technical Education Center, which is located at 1125 Neal Street Northeast, which teaches the D.C. residents free of charge core curriculum, HV, electrical wires, stationary steam fitting, engineering, plumbing, national internal diploma programs, and this particular program is being funded through employment services, that they be engaged in what the doctor's talking about, because it seems to me that these are programs, once again, that could be offered down to our high school level. And I think that that's where we need to try to move in this direction, because let's face the reality, a lot of our young millennial African-American youth, their families simply don't have the resources to send them to college. And with all of these cutbacks and with this proposed budget cuts from 45 with this new tax bill that's going to affect our communities disproportionately, like everything else does, we need to be circling the wagon and trying to plug in what the doctor is doing with as many resources as we can, because this is where this platform comes in. Because I was talking to a gentleman from the Department of DOE this morning, an African-American gentleman. I won't give his name, but he was with the Office of Engagement. And I was talking to him about the fact that I'm trying right now to syndicate this particular program on 38 historically black college radio stations that are NPR stations. So we can reach the earlobes of our young people who are at our HBCUs, as well as at our African-American kids who are going to historical white colleges and universities. Because to me, looking at the actual data that was put out through the Solar Foundation, the numbers don't lie. I have this up on our website. People can go to our news and events tab at positivechangepc.com, click on our news and events tab, and it's under our February archives. The article went on to say that you had 260,000 people working in of the solar industry, but 23.8% women, 11.3% Hispanics, 8.1% veterans, and the numbers to me are very, very screwed, because you're talking about 6.6% African Americans. Fast forwarding in 2013 and 2009, American Association of Blacks in Energy put out a report stating that African Americans, we spent $41 billion for energy in the U.S., but we only had 1.1% of the jobs and 0.8% of the wealth. So that ties back into all of these things that y'all are sharing with our listening audience, because you're breaking new grounds with this new technology that are creating niches in the marketplace where we need to get our young people up to speed on what your organizations are providing. So, Brother Collins, forgive me for cutting you off there, but I wanted to get that point in.
Well, it's essential that we also make green about it, building a better community, a sustainable community that's renewable, and we have to address the health concerns in that process. That's all in building a better community. And I think what Dr. A is talking about, there's so many other industries that we need to address and include in our grant proposal as developing a community health worker that knows not just environmental systems, but what are the impact of some of those sustainable systems that are being installed and how our community need to be educated on those things so that they're better educated in order to make the right decisions about their health and their wellness and their welfare. And I think that's what's going to power the PEPCOs and the $66 million for contractors. Why not also use some of that money to look at health initiatives that's associated with that green technology?
Well, that's the reason why I wanted to have you on, because that brings you to the $32 million that's sitting over at the Public Service Commission. I had Chairman Betty Ann Kane on this show, Solar Now in the Future, with the chair of the Department of DOEE, Tommy Wells. Now, they came on the show when the city council back in May decided they were going to move another $7.5 million from the Renewable Energy Development Fund. Now, this particular fund has collected over $70 million. Now, this comes directly from the ratepayers in D.C. If you pay a water bill, electric bill, or gas bill, they have a surcharge that goes in this renewable development fund. Well, that money is supposed to be used for the same purpose of reducing 100,000 low and moderate income residents' utility bills by 50% by year 2032. But when we look around and looked at how many programs that had actually come out of the door, it was just like the $400 million workforce development grant that you talked about that just hit the hit the streets in Maryland. Well, in 2007, as I was sharing with you, Van Jones, who authored the Green Jobs Act, after Katrina hit New Orleans, Walker Bush was so embarrassed, they codified the Green Jobs legislation in Congress, and that resulted in, when Obama came to power in 2008, $500 million workforce development training. Well, each state got $10 million, including the District of Columbia. This money they've had since 2011. Now, I know because I tried to get the director of the Clean Maryland Energy Center out of Annapolis to come on these airways to share this information with our community about that $10 million of workforce development training, where it went, who got it, and how is the programs going to be implemented, and when would they start. Well, when I got to raising these questions, and I'm from South Carolina, so I'm going to make it plain, being a country boy, you can hear a rat urinating on cotton. So it's that kind of situation. I don't call it a blackout. I call it a whiteout, because folks who don't look like us have this information. And when I got called, and I keep calling, and I keep emailing, and I will continue to call, and I will continue to email and ask them to come on these airways and do the same thing that y'all are doing, because y'all provide some very, very needed information to our communities, our people. I had, even myself, and I've been producing this show, but I had no idea the radiation risk associated with someone putting the PV system on one's home. And that's what is going on, not only going north in the district, because the District of Columbia has some of the highest renewable portfolio standards in the country. The search values, which people, that seems to be the only thing that people are focused on, are trading for almost $378, $400. In Maryland, they're only worth $5. Well, we know what the history on that is, a dirty little secret. 2011, University of Maryland Eastern Shore, under the leadership of Dr. Thomas, built the first utility-sized solar farm on a historically black college campus at University of Maryland Eastern Shore. And she hails from the Virgin Islands, and she also was instrumental in getting the solar farm built in the U.S. Virgin Islands at the University of Virgin Islands. But I had the opportunity to have Brother Haru on this airways of this show, and he talked about the damage that appeared that happened to that farm with the recent storm that hit the Virgin Islands. But to make a long story short, most people are unaware of the fact that when Dr. Thomas got that 17-acre solar farm built at UMES, NASA was closing Cape Canaveral. Apologize for that technical glitch, in Florida, and they moved those launching facilities to Aikiki Island off the eastern shore, where the white farmers surrounding UMES's campus, which sits on 800 acres on the eastern shore, were studying the model that Dr. Thomas was doing. You now have 100,000 acres of solar farms surrounding the University of Maryland Eastern Shores campus, and they're selling this energy to NASA, and it's bought the search value, which trades for almost $400 in the state of in D.C., is only worth $5 in the state of Maryland, because you have almost reached your full capacity, because when the renewable portfolio standards were passed in Annapolis, our folks will sleep at the wheel who look like us, because you only had a 2% threshold for solar. And being that that capacity has been filled, it has brought down the values, because when the values were first started in the state of Maryland, they were trading for almost $150. They now trade for $6, which creates a big issue about the issue of return for putting a PV system on one's home, because of this, what they call the use credit. But I wanted to bring that back to the issue of this health issue, because everything has been focused around the economic aspect, but nobody's looked at the economic aspect in terms of the cost on health. And I think that's very important, Dr. A. Hello?
Yeah. Is Dr. A, you still there?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah, she's still with us. Let me make sure.
I wanted to have her address the fact that she had a NASA study that identified a lot of the components she's identified in her nanotechnology to assist and reduce health disparities.
Yes, we had to turn to NASA as well as retired nuclear engineers from the military, the Navy, the Marines, and the Army. Because, see, they already have protocols in place that mitigate radiation coming from all types of infrastructure. And we took their guidance and we took their research to formulate the program that we have developed. Because not only were we concerned about it being green and sustainable, we were concerned about it being safe. And NASA actually has a machine that you can actually put our technology on the physical body and measure the impact of what it will have in the person's health. And it shows that it helps to correct the static absorption in the body. What's happening in the world of healthcare right now is people have such sustained exposure to Wi-Fi and wireless and all of this going in and out of work through metal detectors that the body is absorbing so much static, it's creating all this degenerative diseases and people losing their kidneys, their nerve bone degeneration, macular degeneration of the eyes. It's incredible. And so, of course, this is a major concern with astronauts because they're going into space and all that radiation, and NASA is advanced in its ability to detect and to monitor the effects of that. So we went to NASA, we engaged the electrophysicists, we took our technology down there and had them take it through a battery of tests, and they said it's highly effective in how it helps the body discharge the radiation and remain balanced and stress reduced. And so some of the miracles and case studies that are now in our tech bay, we're just celebrating with the mayor of Monroe, North Carolina, because they had a child there who was sent home to die. This child had a complete collapse of the central nervous system, and that's all she did was seize continuously. And the doctor said, we cannot stop her seizures. We can't do anything more. We donated technology and went down there and worked with her doctor, her medical doctor, to retrofit her house and build a system for her to wear. And within a half hour, she was already having the spasms people have when they're dying, the irregular breathing pattern, and she was in a semi-comatose state because she was kind of listless and lethargic. Within a half hour, her spasms stopped. Within an hour, the seizures became intermittent. This is a child that had been seizing continuously for about 3 months, and they couldn't stop it. Within about 72 hours, she completely became seizure-free for like 24 hours. And she was like, she woke up, she started talking, she started using her tablet, and she made it to her 21st birthday. And the mayor and the family came together, gave a party for her, made her honorary mayor of the day, did a proclamation to proclaim that day was her day. And a number of university professors that have had their houses done in North Carolina, the North Carolina community came together for this young lady. We have another testimony where a gentleman, 64 years old, had like involuntary Parkinson's tremors, and he was losing his language, so he had stammering conversations. You know, when you talk to him, his words would just stammer out.
I don't want to cut you off, but I want to get this point in. The Department of Energy, DOE, put out a just released a study that said it would reach cost of $263 billion. It will cause 27,000 premature deaths. The study that was put out through the Department of Energy. Now, this was just released on December 4th. The analysis of resources for the future finds that U.S. Department of Energy proposes cost recovery rules to support the coal and nuclear facilities, $250 billion. Now, getting back to renewable energy, looking at the risks associated with the solar and with this radiation, very, very dynamic brother by the name of Reginald Lewis, he died behind what we're talking about right now, and nobody knew, and people were talking about, you know, you can't use that cell phone too much and put that up against your ear. Well, this is some of the same radiation you're talking about that's coming off these PV systems. I'm pretty sure with the stress that we deal with living in the good old U.S. of A., with the chemical imbalances that we have with 15 million of our people in this country being diagnosed as with the stress-related chronically stressed out. I mean, all of this plays into what you're talking about, and to me, it's unconscionable that there is no other platform sharing the information that you two are providing on this show to talk about these. This is a life and death issue.
It really is. And, you know, we have to reflect back to 2009 when Dr. Regina Benjamin, the first African-American female, became the Surgeon General. She immediately went to this problem. She declared a nationwide call to action to promote healthy homes, to make people aware that we have too much air and radiation toxins indoors. She, in this initiative, she asked for universities to come together and find a better way to do indoors. Because my story is I bought a house that almost killed me and my family. I got breast cancer and a stroke. My son got a brain injury and ended up in the hospital almost a year. And a medical doctor in D.C., my husband had died, and I actually moved to Ohio. And one of my colleagues in D.C. bought a $1 million house in the National Harbor. Her son had the same type of injury, and we contacted a nuclear engineer, had these people come to our homes, survey the homes, and when we found out your radiation surge should be lower than 40 in your electric system, mine was 1,500 and hers was 1,200, and it was taking the lives of our family. That's when we got motivated to partner with Dr. Regina Benjamin. We took our efforts to Columbia University to develop the curriculum so that we could bring it into medicine. Medicine already has the codes. They already have codes for environmental adaptation. They already have diagnostic codes that say electricity causes all these injuries. But we don't use these codes in the United States. They use them in Canada. Canada has 7 environmental health clinics. They are 10 years ahead of us.
Hey, not to cut you off, why aren't these codes being used? If they haven't, they're not trying. Well, I know the answer to that question. They don't really care who lives or who dies.
Well, but the answer is we have to care. And there are some of us.
I know we have to care, but the folks who have the codes, it seems to me this cuts across gender, race, and the whole nine yards. Because everybody you know, Lottie Dottie and everybody, has a cell phone, 2 or 3 cell phones walking around. And people are connected 24/7 to social media, to these phones, especially our young folks.
Yes, and now Dr. Keith Black, the surgeon of Johnny Cochran, has started a public awareness campaign with Sanjay Gupta of CNN. They did a video together that's posted up on YouTube talking about these phones being non-ionizing radiation, and the cell phones have slipped manufacturing warning labels now into the user's manual book. If you go read that book, it's going to tell you that cell phones can put you, read that label, it tells you cell phones can put you at a risk for injury, and that you should hold the phone in approximately an inch away from your head when you are on the phone. And if you look to the computer industry, Microsoft Office has put health warning labels on their keyboards now. Hewlett Packard has a health warning label on the keyboard telling you these use of these keyboards and these computers can cause serious injuries and disorders. So have Sony, Wii, Nintendo, all of these electronic kids are gaming because so many, 1 in 3 Americans are getting heart disease. I'm not talking just about adults.
What comes to mind is that I've got a 5-year-old grandson, and fortunately or unfortunately, he loves that computer more than anything else because he walks around. He's 5 years old. He wants to watch his show, his little programs on the computer. He has game boards. They have on Friday at his daycare, they have the kids bring their little computers. I mean, this thing, it goes down, drills down to our babies. So it is very, very important, the information that you are sharing. But I have to take a pause for the calls, and I'm going to have to pay some bills on this show. So we're going to have a little a short music break, and I'm going to try to bring y'all back and sort of close up because y'all have been more than gracious with your time because I originally programmed this for 30 minutes and we've almost gone over an hour and I don't know how much longer I can keep you two because I know y'all are more busy than I am. So let me try to, as we say, take a pause with calls and we'll be right back and we'll have more.
There's a song worth singing. I can sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life.
Welcome, welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know, our call-in number is 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. And remember, you must press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. And remember, this show is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, which is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation companies to address the high economic effects of energy at our historic Black colleges and universities to utilize Black-owned farmlands at our HBCUs and develop capacity and initiatives for workforce development to bring down the underemployment and unemployment of our young African-American millennials attending our HBCUs and our historically white colleges and universities. Also is brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BS HBCU Solar Talk Radio Initiative, and you can get more information about it going to our website at www.bshbcu.org. positivechangepc.com. You can click on our GoFundMe link, and there'll be information about that, because we're trying to get this show syndicated nationwide through our 38 HBCU radio stations that are all NPR stations. That means that they're non-commercial, so we must obtain underwriters. This show is also brought to you by Staten Communications Network, specializing in the following areas: writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production, online and traditional, newspaper letter production, online and traditional, speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, bureau speaker management. And that contact information is ScottandCommunicationsNetwork.com, and the contact person is Dr. Gwendolyn Scott Bethay. And we are back on the airways of Solar Now in the future with its economic impact on Black America. And I hope that you are enjoying this very vital information that Dr. A is sharing with us, along with Mr. Collins from Echo Connect. Mr. Collins, we've been talking about the health disparities in this area, but you do have a youth workforce development component. We talked about the adult workforce development component, so could you sort of share some more information on that?
Well, actually, when they say youth, it's actually the 18 to 24-year-olds is the youth alternative. We do work with younger youth, but it's in other capacities. It's interesting you would say that, because one thing has been brought up is that workforce intervention should start at a very younger age, but a lot of the funding entities identify 18, particularly working with kids, young people with criminal background. But the earliest intervention is needed in fourth and fifth grade to prepare those individuals for a certificate at graduation of 16. Because one of the biggest disparities is that our kids are not prepared to go into the workforce, particularly the 21st century workforce. And it has to include a wide variety of experiences, like community health work. You know, we talk about that disparity with Green, where that individual is trained and educated in how to go into the communities of which they originate from and go in and deliver and identify areas of health concerns and then support education and the delivery of those services to that population. Interesting, the workforce services should look at expanding opportunities at a younger age, and that's why we mentioned in our platform at Eckerd is that we work with youth. But we in workforce development, most of our work is really centered around the 18 to 24-year-old group.
Well, that is something that I definitely wanted to make sure that we got that information in. Dr. A, I want to thank you for the work that you're doing with trying to get and beat the drum and get this information out to our communities about these health disparities coming from the installation of these PV systems. And as you said, living here in the DMV market area, being that this is the Silicon Valley of the East Coast, and we probably have more technology surrounding us than we realize on a day-to-day basis because of just being in this marketplace. Because when you begin to drive out I-66 going into Virginia or 270 going into Maryland, every high-tech company in the world is located here. So without question, we definitely need to be aware of what dangers that this technology brings, because it comes with a cost. And the NAACP Legal Defense of Climate Change group, they put out a study that indicated that within a 7-mile radius of any community of color, any place in the U.S., you have a nuclear or a biomass plant that puts out these toxins in the air, and you can get the high mortality rates. And also, when you look at communities of color, you find that the grid, these power lines, a lot come right through our communities, these major power lines, and they also put off some forms of radiation. So we've got more than enough on our plate to be aware of and to deal with, but the issue is how this show is a platform to bring this information to the light. And I want to thank both of you for taking the time from your very, very busy schedules to join us on the airways of Solar Now and the future with its economic impact on Black America. And is there anything else y'all would like to share in closing?
I just want to thank you, man of God, for beating the drum, because it takes a lot of courage and a lot of consciousness to be able to see and to lift the voices of people and to be a change agent. And I just want to say I'd like to personally meet you and give you a demonstration of this technology so that you can see firsthand the innovation of it and how it helps to improve, and reduce the risk factors for having such technology in our homes. And so I don't know if you, there's a number.
Well, I can make that happen, Dr. A. One of the things that we're trying to do with the show, we're getting ready to link this up with YouTube so we can actually go out and film, do little videos on pieces that are on this information. And so we can share that information because, like I said, one of the things that I share with Brother Collins is that I've been working very, very hard with Dr. Harrison up in Howard. We've been reaching out trying to identify the necessary resources so we could syndicate this show on our 38 historically Black college radio stations around the nation, because this information got to reach the airways of our young millennials on these campuses, because it's not only the employment and growth industry, because everybody run around talking about STEM this and STEM that. Well, that's STEM education is very important. But if you, as Brother Collins, as you said, if you don't have any business out here that can hire our people, well, you get all the degrees you want. But somebody's got to hire you. And it's very clear the Foundation put out the numbers. Numbers don't lie. Out of 260,000 people that were in the workforce in the solar renewable energy industry in 2015, 23.8% women, 11.3% Hispanics, 8.1% Pacific Islanders, 8.31% veterans, and we ball up the bottom of the barrel at 6.6%. Out of 9,929 solar installation companies we only have, with your company coming on board, Dr. A, and now we got 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 out of 9,929. So we can't even get on the, we can't even put that in into the calculator. So this is ridiculous, because President Obama, industry on steroids, when he put in place $30 billion in federal loan guarantees, which 45, that was the first thing he did when he came to power. A lot of people are unaware that 7 historically Black colleges went into the Department of Energy on January 17, 2017, 3 days before 45's inauguration, and signed a memorandum of understanding with University of Maryland Eastern Shore, Morgan State, Coppin State, Johnson C. Smith, Purdue A&M, Southern Shreveport University, University of Virgin Islands, and that got canned. This was for some major funding for initiatives with the renewable energy sector, but none of this would have taken place if our folks had not gone to the polls and put Obama in there twice, because the Sunshine Identity Initiative, which was the biggest thing that Obama's administration did, it was not the Affordable Care Act. It was the Sunshine Identity Initiative, and people can go directly to our website at www.positivechangepc.com. Go to our video gallery and watch that video produced by the Department of Energy. And once again, I want to thank you both for joining us on the airways of Solar Now and the future with its economic impact on Black America. And you will not be a stranger to this show, because it will – I will have you back on in the very, very near future, and you will be able to listen to this show via Twitter, link, or Facebook, and go directly to my website, and this show will be up all because we're streaming live right now, but it'll be posted on our website. So anybody at any time can go there and they can listen to this edition of Solar Now in the future with its economic impact on Black America. So if you both would please share some closing comments, please.
Yes, sir. I want to thank Mr. Collins for calling me this morning and saying, get on this show, and I thank you for the opportunity to allow me to share. We're distinguished in the solar industry because I believe we're the first company that is sustainable and biosustainable, and we're the first company that has been formulated so that doctors can actually write prescriptions for our technology to be utilized for people who have a cadre of diseases that get worse from electricity. And I want to thank you. This is just, we've just scratched the surface. We have selected Washington, D.C., and we are in residence at How You Innovate at Howard. And I just thank, I'm just so grateful for Dr. Harrison and the support his team has given me to bring us to market. And again, thank you so much. And I look forward to working with both you, Mr. Collins, and with you, Mr. Bidet, in the future, because we can get this done.
Well,
thank you, Dr. A.
I want to thank you, Dr. A, for what you're doing, because it's past need. And as I was sharing with Brother Collins, it is a very, 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 very frustrating. As I said, I beat this drum for over a year now producing this show. And I've been criticized, but I keep calling in to our Black radio talk show formats because they're not talking about these issues in this energy industry. And every time a storm comes up, somebody talk about climate change, but you don't have to talk about climate change more. All you got to do, you ain't got to turn your freezer on. All you got to do is package this stuff and you can sell it in office because that hawk is on steroids. So if people can't recognize that we got some issues with the climate, then, you know, it's nothing else I can tell them. They can keep listening to fake news in 45. But, Brother Collins, would you please close out because I want to be able to have you go with some parting information for our listening audience.
Yes, I would think one of my things is innovation in workforce development, meaning we're going to have to put people back into the workforce that may not have credentials. They may not have high school and master's degrees, but to go back and put your bucket down where you at and be diversified enough and get the information that we can go back into our neighborhoods, create an economy in our neighborhoods by serving our communities. And we can do it by building small businesses, but also building individuals in the community to do a wide array of support services, which include energy efficiency, understanding in environmental systems, and you don't have to have a degree in order to do that. Use what you have in your hand and go back and plug into the necessary training that's needed, get educated, and take that information back and rebuild our communities, and our communities are important to us. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Brother Collins, and thank you for contacting Dr. A because y'all were a wealth of information, and I'm quite sure that our listening audience will be very, very pleased with the information because we brought news that you definitely can use. And I want to thank you once again for coming on the airways of Solar Now in the future with its economic impact on Black America. And as we close out this show, we want to share with the listening audience that Pepco is seeking a $66.2 million rate increase. And one of the things that we had captioned this show was to talk about this at the top of the hour, but I was joined by Brother Collins and Dr. A, and everything else is history, but I want to get this information out to our listening audience in the last few minutes of the show today. December 19, 2017, closely analyzed a new $66.2 million Pepco hike for people has been submitted to the People's Council, which will press the utility to justify every dollar for the request. Washington, D.C., a rate case filed today with the D.C. Public Service Commission. PEPCO has requested a $66.2 million rate increase for customers in the District of Columbia. Should the commission approve this request as filed, the average monthly residential bill would increase $7.54 per customer. When you're talking about over 300,000 customers, that's a lot of money. As we do with every single rate case, the Office of People's Council will aggregate, advocate on behalf of the district consumers to ensure that any rate increase is based only on the expenses necessary for PEPCO to deliver safe, reliable electric service and not boost the unjustified company spending, said People's Council, Mrs. Sandra Markovas Fry. When you go, PEPCO requested an $85.5 million increase for distribution rates, its largest rate case in about 10 years. OPC throughout the announcement revealed PEPCO was seeking to recover operating expenses, including expensive perks for PEPCO executives that should not have been proposed for the ratepayers to shoulder. The 2016 request subsidy was reduced to $77.5 million. Based upon the company's OPP's recommendation, DCPS ultimately approved a $36.9 million increase on July 24, 2017. Now, they just got a rate increase of $36.9 million in July, and now they're coming back and asking for another $66.2 million. The commission has approved the PEPCO rate increase totaling almost $133 million. In these uncertain economic times, OPC will especially be vigilant in protecting consumers in all eight wards of the District of Columbia from unjust rate increases, said People's Council's Mrs. Fry. During PEPCO's holding at merger, proceedings, OPC successfully fought for residential rates to be offset by bill credits. As a result, the distribution portion of the D.C. resident electric bill has not increased since April of 2014. That should change, however, depending on the commission's ruling on today's application, expected sometime toward the end of 2018. OPC will keep customers up to date throughout the proceeding as we vigorously advocate for on your behalf. Media contact Mrs. Dixie McCoy at 202-261-1180. Once again, that number at the People's Council is Public Information Office, Mrs. Dixie McCoy at 202-261-1180. Well, you need to be burning up the phone lines. You need to be burning up the phone lines because this is totally unnecessary in my estimate. But who am I? I'm just Ron Lefay, who brings to you news that you can use on solar now and the future with its economic impact on Black America. And as we wind down another exciting edition of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America, we hope that we brought you some news that you can definitely use. And remember that this show was brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation. BSHLF HBCU Radio Talk Show Initiative. You can get more information by logging on our website. And also the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, and by Skyden Communications, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production online and traditional, newsletter production online and traditional, speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, speaker bureau management, And that's ScottonCommunicationsNetwork.com. And your contact person is Dr. Gwendolyn Scotton Pathay. And once again, thank you for joining us for another exciting edition of Soul and Now Future with its economic impact on Black America. Until we do this again next week, remember, we hope that we brought to you news that you can definitely use on the airways of this show. Of Soul and Now and the Future, this economic impact on Black America.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.